This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Frida Liu. You're listening to Raise Your Game. Now, it's not the fittest nor the most intelligent that survives. It is the most adaptable to change. Now, this is a statement that's been widely attributed to Charles Darwin, a man best known for his scientific theory of evolution by natural selection. It took over 8,000 years for humans to move from the agricultural revolution to the first industrial revolution. It's taken just 50 to move from the third to the fourth. This rate of change far outstrips our own human ability to adopt and adapt, and we're only just beginning to see what the future will hold. The question is, can we drive this change? And if so, how do we do this? I'm here with Suganthi Subramanian from Leadernomics, talking about how change is the only constant. Is there a formula to drive change? Now, before we get there as well, Suganthi, you know, it says here it's not the fittest nor the most intelligent that survives. It's the most adaptable to change. A lot of people think it was the fittest, right? A lot of people have this misunderstanding. It's the fittest. It's not.
Absolutely.
Look at the cockroach.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you ask me, I think if man just looks at his daily life, right, in the pace that we are at and the kind of livelihood that we lead in terms of, urbanized area, just what we have to put up on a day-to-day basis, let's not go far. Let's even just talk of the traffic that we are at. If you're not adaptable, you know, the stress levels are high. You have to really kind of work your way through.
Yes.
In kind of adapting to the changes that happen overnight. So one day you have a road that is going on in two lanes. The other day, next day, it's a three lane. And next day, it's shut down. So, you know, you can huff and puff about it. Right. But instead, you really need to see, okay, what do I do now? Mm. And how do I adapt to this change? And right away, go forward with it, right?
Yeah.
So I think I absolutely believe that it's more about being adaptable than to be fit in this space.
And it's very interesting you talk about roads and lanes and all that. It's like, you know, third lane, three lanes, four lanes, and then after maybe the fifth day, what lane?
Yes, absolutely.
You know, for you, Suganthi, before you joined Leadernomics, you know, you were in IT, right?
I was.
And now you're doing learning and development.
Yes.
How has that changed?
Huge, huh? Actually, when I decided to move into learning and development and human resources and also join a small medium enterprise, I had my corporate friend's eyebrow actually go all the way back, you know. They were like, what's going on with you? But I think it is about when I reached a point in my IT career where it was almost at a point where I was plateauing, I realized that I could opt for the safe thing,
right,
which is to go back to a corporate world and do what I'm good at and I know I can do it, or make this leap of faith
right,
and change and see where that would take me. God, have I done the right job? You know, really,
right.
I think I've taken a decision that is bold, but then again, it has given me all the options and the learnings that I've had through this change. So absolutely delighted with it.
Okay. Now, you know, we always talk about the change is the only constant. It sounds so cliche. We always say that.
Absolutely. And actually, I did some research before coming on, and this phrase comes from a Greek philosopher called Heraclitus.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to state what he actually quoted in his book, right? The way up and the way down are one and the same. Living and dead, waking and sleeping, young and old are the same. These things are the same in that they are all subject to change, arise from one change to vanish into another, and all things constantly are in flux and are in that regard the same. That sounds totally deep and profound. Don't
and
you think so?
And you think about it, right? Greek philosophers, how many, thousands or whatever years ago, even then. What more now?
Exactly. And I think he's a genius if he had already figured that out. And we've been quoting him since then, right? Mm. Centuries. And when I look at myself, right? So for instance, Frida, when I grew up in a small town called Port Dickson.
Okay.
And
just there last week. Okay.
Yeah. So really small, tiny, everybody knew everybody kind of thing. Very slow moving, cozy. I was just rearing to get out. And then I went to UTM in Johor and I did my degree and stuff like that. And then there, I was like ready to go to KL, get a corporate job. Mm. You know, I just wanted to be in the fast lane. I was even naive enough to think that, you know, my first role will be all this glamorous, work, the piece that I will be doing. But And then I got there and I've done 25 years of work and I'm not in the least slowed down.
Right.
However, sometimes I just want to go back to that small town, that
right?
Port Dixon.
I don't know if it's us at a couple, at a certain stage in life.
Let's not give away our age.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about, I come from, I grew up in Brunei and my hometown is Kuching. And every time I go back, I feel such peace because it's so nice and quiet.
Absolutely. Isn't it just cyclic? I mean, the way things happen, right? And the change that I wanted so very much, I want to go back there. I want that peace and quiet. So I think even in the business industry, right, or space right now, if you look at it, right, there's really no, you can't make out a bank for a bank. You can't make out, the differences between a transportation company and a e-wallet pay company. Mm. Everything is converging and changing. Mm. And we are up against a whole lot of, stress because we've got all these things that we need to adapt to. Mm. But what Maslow's theory says is we as human beings thrive on this. We really need the novelty and the change, the constant change for us to continue to be excellent in what we do. Yeah. Right. So I think, yeah, well, we're in a good space right now, but yeah, we'll just have to see where it takes us.
And I'm thinking also you would have meet different people through your role right now, talking about learning and development, right? I think it doesn't really matter how old you are. I think people just tend to resist change, right? Mm. How do you drive change?
So I like to really... Okay, so theories being theories. Mm. There's a whole bunch of gurus in the helm of change management, right? Mm. So there's Daniel Goleman, there's John Kotter and so forth. And I'm so glad they feel the same way as I do because, I am someone who's not... only theory. I like to have experience in what I do. So, and John Carter has something called an eight-step change model. Yeah. Okay. And I was just kind of reflecting on my work experience. So I'll give you a bit of a background. Before my last stint in Shell Malaysia was a 2-year stint that I actually held the IT country chair role. And I was tasked to lead a move of IT hub that is based in Cyberjaya to Bangalore, which meant releasing people as well back into, the other work opportunities that they have. And what I realized was that change management process, and I kind of compared that with the 8 steps that John Carter speaks about. First and foremost, I think it would be an understatement if we don't say people are in the heart of change management. Mm. Because if they don't resonate to the change, then you can have the best tool, the best technology, the best communication plan, and it's not going to work. Mm. So first and foremost, one has to have make it clear to the people who are actually receiving the change end what that whole urgency is to change. So you can imagine how hard that must have been for me because I was telling people that we're going to move the IT hub, build it up in Bangalore, and by the way, you will have to leave. Mm. However, in that experience, we also talked about what the organization will do to support the people who are leaving. Mm. And that gave them a sense of security as well as sense of urgency. And one must know and acknowledge that it's not a one-off communication piece.
Right.
More communication is always better than less. Mm. So it's a lot of work that we did, but you need to build that sense of urgency. Mm. Yeah. And then the second thing obviously is about us ensuring that the communication plan comes out from change agents that are within the folks who are impacted. And why I say that is, if, take, for instance, an organization's leadership team telling you, hey, look, we're moving to Bangalore. Mm. And that doesn't come out in a way of sense of feeling or understanding of what the people are going to be facing. Right?
I'm helping to move.
Yes.
And then I'm helping to move and then I got no job after that. Why am I even here?
Indeed. So we really needed to know how we would tailor the conversations and the communication, the messages for the staff to understand it from their point of view. What would be in the message that touches them deeply, right? Mm. So besides the fact that there is an urgency to move to Bangalore from a business standpoint, obviously there was all the right reasons, right? From a technology standpoint, from just the number of people that we needed for the skill sets that we wanted to home into and so forth. But what it also meant was, look, I'm going to lose my job. So what are you going to do for me?
Right.
And so we tailored those messages as well to say, okay, we'll support you with upskilling, we'll support you with counseling, we'll support you with potential employment possibilities and so forth. So that message became real.
Right. We'll discuss the other pointers in just a moment. I'm here with Suganti Subramanian from Leadonomics. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Busy following money trail, BFM 89.9.
This is Race Again. Good morning. Frida Liu here. Change is the only constant. Is there a formula to drive change? I'm here with Suganti Subramanian, Director of Learning Development from Leadonomics. Frida Liu here. Yes, that topic called change. We can never talk enough about it because we always will resist it. You were talking about you were following this 8-step process of making that change. And this is a real life example when you had to move operations for your previous company from Cyberjaya to Bangalore, right?
Yes.
Maybe you can continue with that story.
So we talked a little bit about a sense of urgency. We also talked about the power of collusion. And that is really with the people. So I call it by the people, for the people. So you really have to go down to where the crux is and how you need to solve it. Then there comes an overall vision for the future, and people need to know where the North Star is, right? And what does that look like? So that as we roll out the change management process, you actually then keep assessing if you're on the right path.
Right.
You know, and what do we do along the way to motivate and continue to move people towards the North Star?
Right. How many people are we talking about?
So actually the workforce when we started work was 1,500 people. So which meant that, the final scale of the organization would look very thin and lean to only support business proximate roles. And what that meant was people who would face up to the Malaysian oil and gas, Shell Malaysia oil and gas business. So it was a very small, I think at the point when I left, it was about 200.
Okay. Now I'm looking at that process. You know, you talk about creating a sense of urgency around the need for change, form a powerful coalition of change leaders throughout your organization, create an overall vision for the future. And you were talking about you'll help them into upskilling and possible employment as well. How do you embed your vision with everything you do?
So it's a lot of hard work, Frida. Mm. And what I mean by that is, it is about a constant intentional action that you need to take effort into actually putting it through. So for instance, what we would do is we would have progress reports that we would look at in terms of how we're doing in successfully building up the hiring process, let's say. You know, how were people actually meeting the targets? And from that, if there were challenges and barriers, actually, I'm going on to the next piece where you need to also talk about, okay, so what are the challenges? What and help people through the change so that they meet the North Star. And so it's one thing to look at just progress report, assess where you are, kind of get an understanding of how the groundwork is going. But it's also about then continuing the communications around, how do they feel? So for instance, when you keep seeing all your friends, colleagues leave, your lunch partners going, the motivation levels started
to dip.
Yeah, dip. And so we needed to sit down and say, I used to do floor walks. And what floor walks meant was I would actually go out to each staff and sit down there and say, okay, so kind of what are you doing? How are you feeling? And this was not only work related, it was about just ensuring they knew that I was interested in them as human beings. And that gave me insights to understand, okay, some of the barriers. So how do they feel not having their lunch partners anymore? So what did we need to do as an organization to build a sense of community? So we would have, away days, we would have little get-togethers, dinners that we would go out, but that would make people feel that I have a sense of family still, you know, and that is the consistent piece of work that you need to do. So you need to continuously look out for barriers, look out for, obstacles that are there and help people through that change journey, as well as continue to tell them, here's the North Star, this is the vision, and where are we today? So this is progress.
Right. How long was that whole process, though, from making that move to Bangalore?
So actually, it was announced 3 years ahead.
Right.
Which actually, I think, has its advantages because obviously there are some companies who would give you a pink slip and say goodbye, kind of thing. And I think Shell was absolutely, stellar in that sense.
Right.
They actually gave us 3 years. They gave people a time where, you were phased out. You had a good lead in.
Mm.
So... But then again, when it's a long tenure, you kind of have then to manage as people depreciate in terms of motivation and you have to keep that momentum going. Having said that, right, Frida, on totally different tangent, I have the highest regard for the Malaysian workforce. And I think I had a set of great professionals. I tell this to everyone. I had some of them who were on the very last day are still taking calls to try to make the transition smooth, to move. And I also asked myself, what drives people? And when I did talk to them, right, a sense of ownership and pride in what professionalism I brought to this organization for the last 17 years was held close because we really had to strive towards showing our excellence in order for us to get work into Malaysia at that point of time when we started in 2005.
How do you make change? One of the pointers is to make change an integral part of corporate culture, right?
Right.
And then so, we got many companies that have been around for a long time doing well, coasting along, right? How do you make that a part of culture that is always going to be changed? How do you do that?
I think there's a big part that organizations need to play in not doing change for the sake of change.
Okay.
And I think that would drive people the wrong way. So you know how when you consistently have change, you almost come to a point where you say, this is just another change. It means nothing to me.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think that is something that they have to consciously work on to not just come in as a new leader and say, hey, look, I need to prove something. I need to make a change. Or, this just sounds like a great idea. Everybody is doing digital transformation. Let's go digital transformation. So I think you really, really need to sit down and say, what does it mean to my organization? How do I really, is this bringing the return on investment? Is it building my capabilities? Am I doing better in terms of, kind of work type that I'm giving my workforce? Are we bringing in different skill sets to the organization? Are we giving even better customer experience? And that's, I think, it's integral.
Okay. Yeah. Now, there's this thing called change saturation. What is it and how do you deal with it?
Wow. I know it sounds like saturation, right? Yeah. So change saturation literally just means that there's so much of change that the organization has no more capacity to take it on. And that's literally what I've just told you.
Right.
So sometimes you do change for the sake of change and you're so overwhelmed by the number of changes that come, there's just no capacity to take it going forward. And so you really need to then make conscious decisions on whether you should go ahead and do a change. So prioritize the change.
Okay. How do you know enough is enough?
And that, I think, actually goes back to really building upon your organization's vision and business imperatives. Mm. So you need to go back to where you need to head to. So it's like, what it is as is, where is the future state, and what is going to take you there.
Mm.
And so you have to then build the change. And I think, the question that you ask is also you have to do a sense check. And, like I said, people, by the people, for the people, you really need to continue to have change agents, pockets of change agents in the organization that will come back to you and say, hey, look, we're hearing noise about this. This is not making sense, or people are just overwhelmed. We need more prioritization done in the work that is coming through. Or you start seeing your progress reports showing that there's a dip. Too many red flags when you don't see this, right? So these are all, and people not feeling well, you know, you just start seeing people being away from work or, you know, you don't see the kind of zest that you need in the organization. So I think being a lead, you really need to spend time to keep your eyes, ears open to all of this kind of symptoms. And I'll tell you something. I used to work in a global environment. And because it was a global environment, I had a lot of virtual calls and stuff like that. And you would have to take or make an intentional effort to find out how they were doing or ask them about things that was not work-related to see kind of, you know, are they saying, you know, I'm really tired. I just want to zone out this weekend. I'm not going to do anything. That actually tells you something.
Yeah.
As opposed to somebody saying, you know, I'm going to a football match that my son is going to play and I'm going to go there and cheer him on. And you start seeing nuances of that. And I think
But you also takes leadership to recognize it and to listen to it.
Absolutely.
It's another topic altogether.
Yes, I know. And I tell you, that's a different ball game altogether. But I love the fact that you brought that out. Leadership is something that you really need to have passion in it, and you have to have a lot of intentional work that you want to do.
Right.
It is hard work, but it's great work and satisfying when you see results, right?
Thanks for being with us. Any final thoughts, though?
I want to leave you with this lovely quote from Stephen Hawking. It says, intelligence is the ability to adapt to change. Simple, but that's what I want to leave you all with. Keep thinking about it. Work on it, and I hope and wish you all the very best in all the change that you're going to face.
And in that, it will be a constant in life. Speaking to Suganti Subramanian from Leadernomics, you've been listening to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.